welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room on this special Halloween broadcast. We have a very, very good show for you today, including some archives we're going to show you in the third hour. But we got a lot of news to get into today. I'm going to try to open up the phone lines for your calls in the second hour, but no promises. But no promises, because I got a lot to cover. I got a lot of videos to go to. Let's just get into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 31st of October, 2025. Happy Halloween, everybody. Our first story is this. DOJ demands records on unexplained anomalies in 2020 election after Fulton County did not comply with subpoena. The Department of Justice sent a letter to Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections on Thursday demanding records related to what Georgia's Board of Elections has called, quote, unexplained anomalies in vote tabulation and storage related to the 2020 election in the country, or in the county, rather. District AG for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dhillon, wrote on behalf of Attorney General Pam Bondi, quote, on behalf of the Attorney General of the United States, we request that you present for inspection in its entirety and most original forms all records in your possession responsive to the recent subpoena issued to your office by the State Election Board. Folks, don't let anybody tell you that elections don't matter. If you can get a legitimate election, like we did it had in 2024, we have gone from people going to jail for asking about the, or potentially being charged, being investigated, Arctic Frost being launched on the basis of asking questions to the Fulton County Elections Board about their impropriety, to that being an official stance of the DOJ. What a complete 180 we've turned on this topic. Meanwhile, FBI says potential terrorist attack thwarted in Michigan, 5 people arrested. FBI Director Kash Patel says a potential terrorist attack allegedly targeting Halloween weekend in Michigan was thwarted by the FBI on Friday morning. 5 people between the ages of 16 and 20 were arrested Friday, CBS News has learned. Authorities say they were inspired by a former member of the Michigan Army National Guard who was arrested in May for allegedly planning an ISIS-inspired attack against a U.S. Army site in suburban Detroit. They're accused of providing support for a planned attack on the U.S. Army's Tank Automotive and Armaments Command facility at the Detroit Arsenal. But that was apparently foiled. We'll, you know, bring you more on that later. But yeah, that seems like what we've done over the last couple decades is, you know, import a foreign hostile army that's, you know, starting to carry out attacks. So great. Meanwhile, Trump administration reportedly planning strikes on Venezuelan military targets. The United States has deployed more than 10,000 personnel across the Caribbean theater and built a large naval and air presence in the recent months, while Donald Trump has denied on October 31st, 2025, considering strikes inside Venezuela. But that's what all of the signs point to. And we're still waiting on, you know, the conclusion of this, of the menacing that America is doing. Again, I have questions myself about the propriety of all of this action, but we'll get to that later. Meanwhile, UPenn computer system hacked, email calls college dog crap elitist institution full of woke retards. They actually sent out an email from the official university email account basically saying your email or your university is stupid, their security is crap because they don't hire people for their merit, and it's run by a bunch of woke idiots and DEI hires. So, you know, security suffers just like grades suffer, just like the country suffers. And finally, we have this. What's a filibuster and why does Trump want to kill it? This has been a story reverberating around for the last 24 hours that Donald Trump is calling on Senate Republicans to end the custom of the filibuster, which has bedeviled majority parties for years. The Democrats have been able to shut down the government and keep it shut down through this rule. Trump wants it eliminated. John Thune has refused to do so. And so the shutdown continues. SNAP benefits have been extended thanks to a judge's ruling out of Massachusetts. So, you know, we maybe have a bit of a reprieve before the riots fully start. Also, we got to check in on the Prince of England because it's not going so well. His long-storied friendship with Jeffrey Epstein really biting him in the ass. A lot more stories to come, folks. Stay tuned to this Halloween edition of The War Room.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are, dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
With your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this Halloween edition of The War Room. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. A lot of big news stories. And we're going to have a special broadcast, too, at the end of the show. We're gonna watch some real spooky content. Some real ghoulish activity in the woods in California. I think you know what I'm talking about. But we got a lot to get to before then. And I want to start with a follow-up to a story yesterday. The story yesterday was this. Media Matters, former Media Matters activist, current Dem congressional candidate Kate Abougazel, indicted by feds for a violent ICE protest in Chicago suburb. So we talked about this. We showed you a little bit of her statement where she was lying about what she was doing. Like, I was just protesting near an ICE facility. And then there's the video of her blocking the vehicle and banging on it and attacking it. And I got a video to show you. I got a follow-up video to this. She was being interviewed by somebody who asked her about this, and it didn't go well. It didn't go very well. See, the person made the mistake of showing the video of what this woman actually did. That's very inconvenient because she's trying to lie about what she did. She's trying to portray the crime she's been charged with as political persecution, which doesn't really work when you're showing videos of them committing the actual crime they've been charged with. So, you know, this is something that the left has to, they got to get on the same page. If you're going to be interviewing somebody who's a communist, socialist, subversive liar, you got to get on the same page with them. Do we show the video? Do we not show the video? You can't be blowing up the spot of somebody whose entire political career depends on carefully maintained deception. This should be communism 101 for these people. They didn't know. They weren't prepared for the level of deception necessary to get elected in America with policies that everybody despises. Let's go to clip number 8 here. This is Kate Abba whatever. Literally running away. This is one of the strangest interactions on an interview I've maybe ever seen. Very strange, very bizarre. You can see the discomfort of Kat, and then she runs away. Let's watch.
The indictment alleges that you and others, quote, surrounded a federal officer's vehicle, banged on its hood and windows, etched pig on the side, and impeded movement. Did you etch the word pig on the side of an officer's car?
I'm not speaking to the specifics of anything that's in the indictment right now, but like I said, I do plan on pleading not guilty. Yeah. And the evidence will come out in court, and you know, I plan on winning.
Okay. Well, let's not watch the video of what happened that day that they are But what do you, when you see that, what do you think right now?
You know, Tara, once again, this is my first time being federally indicted. Like I said,
yeah.
I plan on pleading not guilty. The evidence will come out in court, and I plan on winning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. just really quickly, I did want to ask you about just the fact that, like, conspiracy to impede an officer is up to 6 years in prison, forcibly impeding and intimidating an officer is up to 8 years. Is that, like, that could actually hinder your ability to serve in Congress. Are you concerned about that? Did she just sign off? Did she just leave the chat? I'm so confused. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she gone. She gone. No, see, you showed the video that revealed that she was, in fact, guilty of the thing she just said she would be pleading not guilty for. That's, again, you're blowing up her spot here. Carefully maintain deception. That's the key to getting elected as a socialist in this country. So she runs away. She literally runs away without warning. That poor interviewer. We've all been there, but it's a technical issue. Usually they drop by accident. You ask a question, nobody answers. It's a little awkward for a moment, and then they pop back on. And not this case, no. No, she's running away, which I don't blame her. Hell, if I was her, I'd be running away to Mexico. I'd be running away to Canada. If I got tricked into committing a felony, facing a combined 14 years behind bars for my stupid little political stunt that I was told that I'd be able to get away with because I'm a leftist and we never get in trouble. Yeah, if I'd fallen for that trick, I too would be running away out of the country, starting a new life as a sheep herder in Algeria or something. I'd get the hell away from justice. So good luck, Kat. Kat's on the run. She's on the run. And I suggest she flee the country, frankly. Her political career is over in a very big way. What do you expect? What do you expect to happen when you break the law like that, you absolute fool? Again, it's like we don't even need to persecute these people. They literally just break the law, and we just have to actually apply legitimate justice to their cases, and then the problem is solved by itself. Isn't that amazing? And we got a lot of politics to talk about and some stuff that I don't think people are fully aware of. And perhaps you need this. Perhaps you need to know what's actually going on. For one thing, tariffs are up for discussion at the Supreme Court. And this could be a very big deal. I was talking to an investment banker, a hedge fund guy today, and luckily, I don't have any money in the stock market because I consider it black magic witchcraft. I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. But if you do have money in the stock market, as most people do, you might want to make sure your, what is the term, stop losses, stop gap losses, something like that. I genuinely, stop loss. Thanks, Crew. Crew knows more about economics than I do. You might want to make sure those are all short up because, according to my source, if the Supreme Court goes against Trump on tariffs, which it's a thin line, there it's looking like it might be 5-4 in favor of Trump, but certainly not a sure thing. And according to my source, it could potentially wipe out 15% of the stock market overnight. So that would be a very big deal. And this is a very big deal. It's such a big deal. The rumor is Donald Trump is planning on actually attending the Supreme Court hearing where the tariff issue is being decided, which, as far as I can tell, would be, I believe, the first time a president has ever attended a Supreme Court hearing in this fashion. That should tell you what a big deal this is. From New York Magazine, why the Supreme Court might strike down Trump's tariffs. When the Supreme Court hears arguments next week on President Donald Trump's tariffs, prepare for crossed wires. Liberals who typically oppose Trump's economic policies will espouse traditionally conservative legal principles. Conservatives who prioritize doctrine over Trumpism will agree with those liberals, forming an unlikely alliance, and those who reflexively support anything Trump does, for the pure Trump of it all, will twist themselves into pretzels to justify the president's unbounded executive power grab. In the end, the court is likely, though not certain, to strike down Trump's tariff plan as presently constituted. So obviously this is New York Magazine, very leftist mag, trying to phrase it in the most unfriendly way possible. The fact is, Trump does have the right and obligation to manage tariffs. That is his prerogative as president of the United States. And he has done so if this Supreme Court decision goes against him, it wouldn't just mean, you know, reconfiguring his tariff policy. It would, I believe, and I really don't understand how this works, but somehow that would make them pay back the tariffs that they've already accrued. They've already gotten something like $300 billion from tariffs just this year. And that may have to be returned somehow, which I don't even understand how that would work. But the outcome of this Supreme Court case is going to be a big one, and you should be aware of it. Again, from SCOTUSblog.com, Trump's tariffs to face Supreme Court scrutiny. They'll be hearing this case on Wednesday, November 5th. The Supreme Court will hear oral arguments and a pair of challenges to President Donald Trump's power to impose sweeping tariffs on virtually all goods imported into the United States. The economic stakes are massive, but the cases are also an important test of the presidential power more broadly. This is a brief explainer of the issues on the case. So the dispute over the tariffs started in February when Trump began issuing a series of executive orders imposing tariffs. The tariffs can be divided into two categories. The first type, known as trafficking tariffs, target products of Canada, Mexico, and China because Trump says those countries have failed to do enough to stop the flow of fentanyl into the United States. The second category, known as worldwide or reciprocal tariffs, imposed a baseline tariff of 10% on virtually all countries and higher tariffs anywhere from 11 to 50% on dozens of them. In imposing worldwide tariffs, Trump cited large trade deficits as an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and economy of the United States. One case was filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia by Learning Resources and Hand to Mine, two small family-owned companies that make educational toys with much of their manufacturing taking place in Asia. To survive, the companies say they would have to raise their prices by at least 70% to offset the high tariffs. Another case challenging the tariffs was brought by the U.S. Court of International Trade by several small businesses, including VOS Selections, a New York wine importer, and Terry Precision Cycling, which sells women's cycling apparel. They described the tariffs as an existential threat to the company. It was joined in a second case, also filed by the Court of International Trade, brought by 12 states, which say they're affected by the increased tariffs because they buy goods from overseas directly and purchase products where imported by others. Article 1 of the Constitution gives Congress the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, and requires that bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. In issuing the executive order that imposed tariffs, Trump relied on primarily on a 1977 law, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, Section 1701 of IEEPA, provides that the president can use law to deal with any unusual and extraordinary threat which has its source in whole or substantial part outside the United States to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States. If he declares a national emergency with respect to such threat, Section 1702 of the Act provides that when there is a national emergency, the president may regulate importation or exportation of property in which any foreign country or national thereof has any interest. So they will be approaching this question on Wednesday. Like I said, it looks like it's going to go Trump's way in a 5-4 split, but that is a very thin margin of victory and not one that I think people with their money in the stock market should be, you know, betting their life on, which is exactly what would be the case. So there you go. Meanwhile, four GOP senators sided with Democrats when it came to a vote to oppose Trump's tariffs. On Thursday, the Senate voted to disapprove President Donald Trump's use of tariffs in trade, with four GOP senators joining with the Democrats. Thursday's vote sought to terminate the national emergency powers Trump invoked to implement his reciprocal tariffs from earlier this summer, which ranged from 10 to 50% on imports from various countries. The measure narrowly passed 51 to 47, with Republicans Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell, Lisa Murkowski, and Senator Susie Collins siding with the Democrats. However, the vote is largely symbolic, as the House Republicans leaders have proposed any votes on tariff-related measures until March, and even if the House were to act, Congress would still need a two-thirds majority to override a veto from Trump. So it doesn't look like that's going to be happening anytime soon. But again, you got to wonder why folks like Rand Paul would oppose this, I guess, because it's taking power from the Congress, away from the Congress into the executive branch. But isn't this preferable to the immense taxation burden on the American people, that we tax people who want to? I mean, these arguments have already been made. I think the tariffs are a great idea. I think they have been effective so far. They've raised a hell of a lot of money, and prices have gone up, but they've been going up for long, long before any tariffs got involved. Let's talk about this terrorist attack that was thwarted in a Muslim-majority Michigan city. Early this morning, FBI Director Cash Patel and FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino announced they'd thwarted a potential terrorist attack in Michigan. In his post on X, Patel said several people were arrested, calling it an incredible success. In his X post, Patel thanked the men and women of the FBI. The suspects were allegedly plotting a violent attack over Halloween weekend. Although the FBI has not named any of the suspects, Dearborn is a Muslim majority city and has recently been in the news. On September 9th, during a city council meeting, the city's mayor, Abdullah Hamoud, told Dearborn resident Ted Barham that he wasn't welcome in the city after he objected to Wayne County's decision to name a major street in Dearborn after longtime Arab American leader Osama Siblani. Barham's objection to the street being named after the 70-year-old Siblani was due to his ties to terrorist organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah. The Muslim Dearborn mayor has been criticized for what appears to be his attempt to alienate non-Muslims in the community while making obvious attempts to cater to the non-English-speaking Muslim immigrants. A perfect example of Mayor Hamoud's catering to the city's foreign population is his use of Arabic subtitles in his post on X, like the one posted in this article, which shows the Dearborn mayor introducing the city's latest all-Arabic magazine mailed to residents. So imagine being, you know, born and raised in Dearborn, Michigan, especially if you're like a 60-year-old person and you've seen your city go from, you know, a wonderful like symbol of Americanism to literally being occupied by foreigners who don't speak your language and tell you you don't belong there when you object to a street being named after a literal Muslim terrorist. It's just a straight up takeover. And I just can't express how outrageous I find this all. It's utterly and completely outrageous and absurd. And they're really pushing. They're really testing the bounds of American temperance. And I think that's a irresponsible thing for them to do, let's just say. And I think it'd be perfectly valid for Trump to make some extraordinary measures to reclaim this portion of our sovereign territory that is currently being occupied by hostile foreigners. I think that's a perfectly valid way to see what's going on there, since clearly that's how they see it. AK-47's online chats and Pumpkin Day reference led FBI to avert potential ISIS-inspired terrorist attack. And yeah, we might not have the suspects' names, although I believe we do have some suspects' names are out already. I know because I remember skipping over them because I wasn't able to pronounce them correctly. Yeah, it was an ISIS-inspired attack. This was not the right-wing white supremacist terror that we've heard so much about. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is calling out horrific mass slaughter of Christians taking place in Nigeria by radical Islamists. He then announced that the U.S., quote, cannot stand by while such atrocities are happening. And it truly is horrific. In fact, I don't think I brought in the video, but there are videos of this where you can see the, you know, Muslim executioners just smiling and laughing and having a great time while behind him an entire village burns littered with bodies. Here's what Trump said on Truth Social earlier today. Christianity is facing an existential threat in Nigeria. Thousands of Christians are being killed. Radical Islamists are responsible for this mass slaughter. I'm hereby making Nigeria a, quote, country of particular concern. But that is the least of it. When Christians or any such group is slaughtered, like is happening in Nigeria, 3,100 versus 4,476 worldwide, something must be done. I'm asking Congressman Riley Moore, together with Chairman Tom Cole and the House Appropriations Committee, to immediately look into this matter and report back to me. The United States cannot stand by while such atrocities are happening in Nigeria and numerous other countries. We stand ready, willing, and able to save our great Christian population around the world. Which I fully endorse that last sentence, and something that we should have been doing a long time before this. And I have to wonder how much this has to do with Israel. Because if you're talking about protecting Christian populations around the world, one Christian population that is under direct threat would be the Christian population in the West Bank and Gaza, who've had their churches bombed, their holy sites destroyed, and are currently being ethnically cleansed from a huge part of the West Bank, which is in direct violation of Trump's recent demand that the West Bank not be annexed into Israel. In fact, I believe we do have a video of this. Clip 32, Israeli settlers are burning down the Christian town of Tebe, which has an entirely Christian population. So again, when you oppose Israel's actions, you often are accused of being in bed with the Muslims. you're a Qatari agent or you are some sort of Islamo-fascist that just hates Israel because you hate Western civilization, the reality is that there are a lot of Christians being attacked by Israel, and they, in the Israeli government and the settlers themselves, see absolutely no distinction between Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims. To them, they're all Palestinians, inhuman and unworthy of consideration. So they're being killed, ethnically cleansed, and beaten if they resist. So let's go to clip 32 here, and we'll see the Israeli settlers and the fires that they're lighting in this entirely Christian town in the West Bank. So you see the fires of the olive groves and the villages there. This, of course, is just the latest. I really could be bringing you an update every single day as these attacks continue. And maybe we should be protecting them. Maybe we as Christians have a responsibility to protect them, just like I think we have an obligation to object and intervene with what's going on in Nigeria. You guys bring up that. I want to read that headline. I didn't have a chance to read that. The Sudanese butcher. That is the guy I'm talking about. That's the guy I saw the video of. Smiling, laughing, holding a machete as bodies burn around him. The TikTok-loving Sudanese butcher of the century warlord who boasted of slaughtering 2,000 people after horrific footage showed him coldly executing men one by one. Ah, TikTok. The TikTok warlord. Well, it shouldn't be hard to find him, should it? We have a lot more to cover here on the other side. We're going to get into something I know Alex touched on a little bit, which was the statement from the Heritage Foundation. And it continues the coverage that we spent most of the show on yesterday, the great divide being forced by the Zionist right as they demand that we kick out and ostracize a sizable portion of the Republican base because they aren't sufficiently suicidally dedicated to Israel. And There's been sort of a flip-flop with the Heritage Foundation that I'm having trouble putting my finger on exactly what their stance is. What happened is you have this massive push to demonize Tucker Carlson and kick him out of, you know, conservative spaces. Then people noticed that his information was removed from the Heritage Foundation website. People said, okay, Heritage Foundation is occupied, they're being controlled, they're, you know, being weaponized against Tucker Carlson. Then they came out and made a video saying, no, that's not what's happening. We firmly stand by Tucker Carlson, and we refuse to comply with the hate mob. And somebody was, well, everybody I follow was extremely happy and celebratory about the video statement. We'll show you it on the other side after a short commercial break. But then today they came out with another statement, kind of walking back that video in a weird way. And the guy, Kevin Roberts, who you're seeing on screen now, who made the video, that again, I completely agree with, and we'll watch on the other side, came out to clarify that actually Nick Fuentes is the devil and we have to actually expel him from the party, which is an exact, undoing the exact opposite of everything he said in the video. So it's a little bit confusing, a little bit of a flip-flop in my opinion, but we'll show you the video and then we'll show you the very long post he made today in response to an obviously overwhelming amount of pressure that came down on him. But I got a lot of other videos to go to as well, so stay tuned. Make sure you go to thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com today to get yourself some tricks and some treats for this Halloween celebration. thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. And right now, there is a massive sale that's just kicking off and will continue all month of Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales. Right now, everything on the store is 25% off. That sale is going to end, and we don't even know when. Spooktacular sale, theauctionstore.com.
Therapists in the U.S. say they are seeing increasing numbers of patients with what they call Donald Trump anxiety disorder.
Trump anxiety disorder.
Trump derangement syndrome.
Trump derangement syndrome is clinically real.
It doesn't merely affect individuals, but entire political parties, rendering them unrecognizable.
One minute, they're perfectly normal. The next, rabid.
The veneer of civilization is evaporating quickly. Families and culture are collapsing. And godless leftists are behaving just like zombies of modern lore.
You can't trust your mother.
Get the hell out of here!
Get the fuck out of here!
Your best friend.
Get that camera out of my face!
The neighbor next door.
Psychologist Dr. Stuart Bassman says for his clients, it started the morning after the election.
Doctors are seeing patients suffering from Trump anxiety disorder.
A number of people are manifesting what I would call post-traumatic stress disorder.
An overpowering fear that President Trump represents the end of the world.
Pray it doesn't happen to you.
Land of the dead!
Revid.
White males.
Real quick, I just wanted to plug the Methylene Blue. I'm a new supplement buyer from Alex Jones Store, and I keep hearing people talking about the Methylene Blue, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the hype is all about, but I definitely want to try it. And what I noticed is I didn't get the sensations that a lot of the other people said that they got, you know, like the tingling fingers and like this, you know, euphoria. But I do have an ample amount of energy, and I'm disabled, so I'm a housewife, and whenever you're at home, day in and day out, 7 days a week, it really tends to drag after some time. And there were things that I wasn't doing around the house that I should have. But now I'm getting things done like really quick. I have all this extra time on my hands now. And I really think it's the Methylene Blue that's been giving me the energy. And it's so funny because now, like, my silly husband's calling me a meth head, which is hilarious. But, yeah, so I'm going to stick on that. And I actually have some bovine coming in today, so I can't wait to try that out. I'm also going to give that to my dog because, you know, I need a lot of help, too. And I brought a line that's really good for your dog if you give them, like, a small little amount of the food. So I'm going to do that. But yeah, I just thought I would tell you guys about my experience with this so far. So,
well, Jen, thank you. That's amazing to hear, and we love to hear that. Honestly, I mean, that's the reason why Alex has created the shop, so people can get, you know, get healthier and not be relying on big pharmaceutical companies, but instead take control of their health. So that's good to hear. You know, I fluctuated weight wise too. And so finding something that works is really important, and not to get hooked on those like high caffeine, insane chemicals, energy drinks, which so much of us have relied on over the years. I literally was getting anxiety from one of them. And so I too am on the blue these days. So I guess your husband would call me a meth head, but it's good to hear from you, Jen. I love it. I think it's great. And I love to hear from you as well.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We'll go to the video I was talking about in the last segment, clip number 4 here. Because again, to lay out the pattern of events, you had Tucker Carlson interview Nick Fuentes, and you had a highly coordinated and deeply annoying campaign to demonize Tucker over this, to expel Tucker Carlson, a heinous anti-Semite Tucker Carlson from the MAGA movement over his platforming of this heinous yet deeply popular individual, Nick Fuentes, and just a huge, you know, whole of the world operation against Tucker Carlson. And people noticed that the Heritage Foundation removed Tucker Carlson from their website. So people were mad at them and said, what the hell? You're succumbing to this just woke pressure campaign, which is what it is entirely. Just the exact same tactics that the left uses, but this time on the right and applying to the right. And so Heritage came out and made a video saying, no, we have not distanced ourselves from Tucker, and we will not be complying with the demands of this hateful mob, I believe he calls them. We'll listen to it right now. So after that video came out, people got even more angry, and it was the only thing on Twitter after the show yesterday. Nothing but Heritage Foundation responses and people basically threatening to destroy the Heritage Foundation, withdraw support for refusing to condemn Tucker Carlson. Again, all of this trouble, all of this chaos, all of this division coming squarely from One Direction. And it ain't the Groypers, folks. It ain't Tucker Carlson causing all this trouble. It's the Zionist pressure on the right that is now finding, you know, the funding it's been doing of conservative organizations a very useful leverage tool to wield in the drive to expel anybody who even dares to question Israel's government out of the party. So let's go to this video from yesterday. This is Kevin Roberts of the Heritage Foundation explaining that they're not going to bend to the will of a hate mob demanding that they separate from one of their most popular and prolific contributors. Let's watch.
I'll have more to say on this in the coming days, but today I want to be clear about one thing. Christians can critique the state of Israel without being anti-Semitic. And of course, anti-Semitism should be condemned. My loyalty as a Christian and as an American is to Christ first and to America always. When it serves the interests of the United States to cooperate with Israel and other allies, we should do so, with partnerships on security, intelligence, and technology. But when it doesn't, conservatives should feel no obligation to reflexively support any foreign government, no matter how loud the pressure becomes from the globalist class or from their mouthpieces in Washington. The Heritage Foundation didn't become the intellectual backbone of the conservative movement by canceling our own people or policing the consciences of Christians. And we won't start doing that now. We don't take direction from comments on X, though we are grateful for the robust free speech debate. We also don't take direction from members or donors, though we are inherently grateful for their support. And we're adding more every day. This is the robust debate we invite with our colleagues, our movement friends, our members, and the American public. We will always defend truth. We will always defend America, and we will always defend our friends against the slander of bad actors who serve someone else's agenda. That includes Tucker Carlson, who remains, and as I have said before, always will be a close friend of the Heritage Foundation. The venomous coalition attacking him are sowing division. Their attempt to cancel him will fail. Most importantly, the American people expect us to be focusing on our political adversaries on the left, not attacking our friends on the right. I disagree with, and even abhor, things that Nick Fuentes says. But canceling him is not the answer either. When we disagree with a person's thoughts and opinions, we challenge those ideas in debate. And we have seen success in this approach as we continue to dismantle the vile ideas of the left. As my friend Vice President Vance said last night, what I am not okay with is any country coming before the interest of American citizens, and it is important for all of us, assuming we are American citizens, to put the interest of our own country first. That's where our allegiance lies, and that's where it will stay.
Now, it may surprise you to know that that statement, that I think most people would agree with 90% of it, totally unobjectionable. That statement was treated like a nuclear bomb on X. As a response to that, I mean, people were flipping out about what he said, even though everything he said was just 100% like verbatim foundational principles in conservative policy. I mean, this is what differentiates us from the left, the willingness to talk, the willingness to entertain ideas, even those abhorred by the elites that rule our country. Nothing objectionable about that, as far as I can tell. I don't agree with all of it. He says he abhors Nick Fuentes' stances. I don't agree with that, but I also don't have to. What's the big deal? And so in response to that, Nick Fuentes commented on that video saying, I'm not sure what views you abhor about me. And so today, Kevin Roberts, that guy that just said all of those exactly correct things, I really don't understand the flip-flopping. I don't understand the back and forth, because in that video, He calls the people trying to get them to oust Tucker Carlson. He says they're the ones, you know, causing the division. He calls them globalist mouthpieces in Washington, you know, the globalist controllers or whatever he calls them. He calls them a venomous coalition. So he's like, okay, there's this venomous coalition of globalist mouthpieces that want us to, you know, destroy Tucker Carlson because he criticizes the state of Israel, which is all correct. And then he comes back today to basically write an entire essay about how Nick Fuentes is evil and needs to be condemned. So I think I have a pretty clear vision of what happened here. Okay, I'll read his statement and try to discern what the behind-the-scenes goings-on were, but I think it's fairly apparent. You know, the meme is, you know, you got the call. He got the call. And let me tell you, folks, the call is absolutely real. And it ain't just one call. It's usually you got the calls. You got the dozens and dozens of calls and text messages and DMs and public posts on X demanding that you clarify that while you're not separating from Tucker Carlson, you do denounce Nick Fuentes. And it's very real. I know because I've gone to shows and people get the call about me going on the show. When I did the debate with Misfit Patriot on Alex Stein's show, both of them were talking about receiving calls, telling them not to do it. No one ever calls me. I don't know why. No one ever tries to tell me not to do something. They did once. Actually, Gabe Hoffman tried once, but that didn't work because I had Alex Jones on my side. I think I've told that story, right? You've never heard it? All right, the crew's never heard it. So a long time ago, I think I was like, I must have been hosting for Owen at some point on the War Room, you know, probably 2 years before American Journal even started. And I invited on Revenge of the Sis, which is great guys over on Rumble. And I got a call or a text or something from Gabe Hoffman, who's this hedge fund manager. He did Open Secrets, the documentary. Man, I think this is all the right guy. I don't want to be defaming somebody. But I got the call that was like, you know, Alex, you know, your boss has enough on his plate. You really don't want the trouble that comes along with having these guys on. You know, I'm looking out for you. And I think for your sake and the sake of, you know, your boss not being mad at you, you know, you probably shouldn't cause trouble for him by having these guys on. And it kind of freaked me out because I was like, oh, geez, I don't want to cause trouble for Alex. Like, I don't want Alex getting a bunch of calls from people being like, your host is having anti-Semitic people on. So I go up to Alex and I'm like, hey, Alex, you know, I got these guys. And Alex is like eating food in the break room. He's just like, what? Who? I don't care. Have on whoever you want. He's like, what? Why are you telling me this? I'm going up to him like, hey, Alex, look, there's this guy and he's telling me that there's maybe. And Alex is just like, what? What are you talking about? Have whoever you want on. Gabe who? What? Like, it was just, and I was like, oh, okay. And I was really nervous for a second. Then I asked Alex and he's just like, what? Go have on whoever you want. Like, don't ask me, basically. And it was great. So like, you know, that's how you defeat the call. You defeat the call by ignoring the call. You defeat the call by they make demands of you and you say, oh, okay. And then you just do what you were going to do anyway. And then nothing happens because they don't actually have power over us. That's the truth with InfoWars. I don't know about people that rely on donations like the Heritage Foundation, but the call is real. The call will come in. They'll use all these pressure tactics. I mean, we saw it with the Charlie Kirk text message reveals. I mean, this is the way this stuff works. And so I'll read this statement. Maybe I should lay it out first. Because what happened, I believe, is that this guy is probably not super familiar with Nick Fuentes. He's probably seen clips of him like everybody has. And he's probably watched some of them and thought, okay, some of them are funny. Some of them are, you know, a little too far, but whatever. And then he gets call after call after call from people going, you don't realize how dangerous this kid is. Do you know what he says? And the guy's probably like, no, what, you know, shoot, like, who did I defend? Even though he said he abhors Nick Fuentes' views, he still was like, but, you know, he's got to let the guy talk and we can confront these views and talk about him. And he got calls from people going, no, you don't understand. You don't understand how dangerous this guy is. You don't understand what you're doing by merely, you know, softly denouncing him. You've in fact, you know, told people that he's somebody they should have on. You need to fix this. And then they sent him videos And that's what I think happened. I think they sent him out of context clips, probably a dozen of them, probably the worst things Nick has ever said, probably most of them in jest, but cut out of context, and sent it to this guy going, this is the kid that you're saying, you know, should be platformed. This is the kid. Because when I read the statement, you'll see he quotes Nick a few times, but every single time it's out of context. Every single time the thing Nick is saying is clearly a joke. And you'll see. I'll read them to you. But I think that's what happened. I think he had a pressure campaign and people sent him a whole bunch of clips of Nick, the most important things he's ever said in jest or otherwise, and convinced him that, like, no, you know, Nick just goes on and basically just rails against the Jews in a violent and outrageous way every day. It's not really the case. Here's the statement. I'll read it to you and we can dissect it. Kevin Roberts, Texas, on X says, yesterday I said that I abhorred views expressed by Nick Fuentes, and that was the best way to fight anti-Semitic ideas was to challenge them head on. Fuentes replied on X by saying, I don't know what exactly you abhor about my views. Allow me to elaborate because there's plenty to condemn. First, he says, the Heritage Foundation and I denounce and stand against his vicious anti-Semitic ideology, his Holocaust denial, and his relentless conspiracy theories that echo the darkest chapters of history. We are disgusted by his musings about rape, women, child marriage, and abusing his potential wife. The whole crew's laughing. Because everybody knows it's a joke. Everybody knows it's a joke. Like, this is the problem, y'all. Half of what Nick Fuentes says is ironic, exaggerated, a little over and above what he actually believes. But I do the same thing, maybe not to the same level. I guarantee you could find things from this week that I've said that sound abhorrent. If you watch it in context, you know that my beliefs are to love everybody and, you know, peace and prosperity and all this wonderful stuff. But you're doing a show for a couple hours a day, no teleprompter. You're going to, you know, try to make points that maybe don't come across exactly right. But, like, do they really think Nick Fuentes is talking about beating his potential wife? Like, who do these people think that they're dealing with? It's so weird. It's kind of the same thing with Tucker Carlson, where they're like, he's anti-Western. He's anti-Western society, Western civilization. It's just like, what? Just what does that even mean? What are you even talking about? Just no, he makes jokes, he's edgy, whatever. But they take that out of context and then, you know, put just the sentence in and it makes it sound bad. No, he's not actually in favor of rape or abusing your wife. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Fuentes made grotesque analogies to try to cast doubt on the murder of 6 million Jews during the Holocaust and said, quote, I think the Holocaust is exaggerated. I don't hate Hitler. Well, how dare you? You have to hate, sir. Remember, that was the point Kanye was making in the interview with Alex Jones and Nick Fuentes. Going, you can't tell me who to hate. I love everybody. I love Stalin. I love Hitler. I love Jews. I love non-Jews. I love everybody. You can't tell me who to hate. And you can't be mad at me for not hating somebody that you want me to hate. It's actually like one of the most clear expressions of literal, you know, unbounded love that anybody's ever said. Because you're supposed to hate Hitler. You're really supposed to hate Hitler. But as a Christian, you're not supposed to hate anybody. You can hate the things he did. You can hate the pain he caused or the suffering and the devastation that he wrought on all of Europe. But you're supposed to have grace and mercy for the human in hopes that they could save their soul. Of course, it's too late for Hitler, but you're still not supposed to hate him. Saying the Holocaust is exaggerated, I mean, they've revised the number down like 3 times. There's no soap made out of Jewish bodies, no lampshades. Like, that stuff, those are exaggerations. People still believe wholeheartedly. A lot has been exaggerated about the Holocaust. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. But you should be allowed to question it. You should be allowed to say it's exaggerated. You should be allowed to say that it wields an inordinate influence on the modern world. It's become, in a lot of ways, a new state religion. I don't think that's an exaggeration. So why shouldn't you be allowed to question that? Fuentes called for the death penalty for, quote, perfidious Jews and other non-Christians, stating, quote, when we take power, they all need to be given the death penalty. Again, do we think there's any context around this? Or do you think it was just, Hey, what's up, everybody? This is America First with Nick Fuentes. We've got a great show for you tonight. Perfidious Jews should be killed, and all non-Christians should be killed. More on that later. First, we're going to talk, come on. Clearly, this is out of context. I don't even know the context of this. Do you really think he says all non-Christians should be killed? Do you really think that's a position that he genuinely holds? Do you really think Alex Jones thinks he's the Joker? Again, all this is hilarious and ridiculous. And it's stuff like this. Fuentes stated that his goal is, quote, total Aryan victory, and claimed that, quote, black people should be in prison for the most part. But this is just a sampling of his vile daily rhetoric. Yeah, it is a sampling. It's a very particular sampling of clearly exaggerated, hyperbolic, out-of-context statements that you've cherry-picked to persuade the ignorant. It's unfortunate that you've been pressured to do this and that you're giving into it, because all you're doing is exactly what you claimed you weren't doing yesterday, is allowing the lies and misrepresentations of a perfidious cabal of globalist mouthpieces, a coalition of the venomous. Yeah, that's who is promoting the idea that Nick Fuentes is a literal Nazi who wants total Aryan victory. The dude's not Aryan. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? He wants total Aryan victory, but he's a Hispanic, half Hispanic guy. Okay, great. He's half Hispanic, half Italian, but he's actually a dyed-in-the-wool, German socialist Aryan. Sure. And it's this next sentence, really. We don't need to go through all of it, but this is just such a weak and gay statement is all I really have to say. And it's just like, what do you not understand about how these operations work? What do you not understand about the divide and conquer tactic being deployed right now? Do you think it stops with Nick Fuentes? Do you think if we all denounce Nick Fuentes, everything calms down, everything goes back to normal? Or do you think the next person who's just below, or do you think it's Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones next? Do you think, you don't give them an inch because they'll take it a mile. We all should have learned this lesson 10 years ago. Why are we still having to teach it? And the ultimate understanding of this, the ultimate way to break free, I'm about to give you the real truth here, folks, because here's the sentence that explains all of this. He says, racism and anti-Semitism are not relics of the past. They have blossomed on the left on university campuses and grown on the right through figures like Fuentes. Racism and anti-Semitism, folks, here's the headline, don't exist. They don't exist. They're made up words that describe nothing. That's it. That's the answer. That's the solution, is understanding that these are words who only have the power that you give to them. Racism was not a word until like 100 years ago, when it was designed and created specifically to demonize the natural proclivity of every human being for all of time. The way to think of this when it comes to racism is, what if somebody invents a word called familyism and you're a familyist? And if you prioritize or care more about your family than other families, that's despicable. That's hateful. And you're a bad person for liking your family. It's essentially the same thing. I mean, race is just, an extension of the family. It's an extended family. It's all people who are related to one another. I'm frankly kind of shocked that the name took off in the first place. Shows you the, power of propaganda. Racism, a condition of being that every single human being expressed for all of time forever. Just like having a family. You have a group of people that you're a group of people, your tribe, your clan, your race, and they're yours. And it's, you're one of them and they are of you. And it is all one thing. And everything you do reflects on them. And everything you do either hurts or benefits or, harms them. Just like a family. And then somebody comes along and says, actually, to prioritize or to even notice differences between races is racist. So if I say, hey, my neighbors, the Browns, they're all incredible athletes, all the Browns are great athletes. The mom's a great athlete. Dad's a great athlete. All the kids are great athletes. Their cousins come over. They're all incredible. Oh, how familyist of you. How dare you? You're saying there couldn't be a Brown that's not athletic? It's like, what are you talking about? You just notice groups of people. You are in a group of people, and you have considerations about that group. Racism doesn't exist. Let me say it again. Racism doesn't exist. It's not a thing. It's not real. Same thing with anti-Semitism. Why do you think it's called anti-Semitism? Why would they choose that weird combination of syllables? If it was about hating Jewish people, wouldn't it just be called anti-Jewishness? Wouldn't it be called anti-Judaism? Why Semitism? Make it sound racial? So is it a religion or a race? If you're trying to make it racial and you're saying anti-Semitic being Shem, then shouldn't it apply to mostly Muslims from the Middle East? Aren't they descendants of Shem? No, it does. It's a word that doesn't mean anything. All it means, all it is something to be deployed to silence people. It's a tool. It's a weapon of censorship. And that's all. It's hard to explain because it's just like we give so much power to these words. We give so much power to these symbols. They're just vibrations. They're just words. They don't mean anything. And when they can be applied to everything, they really don't mean anything. When you say it's anti-Semitic for me to dislike Israel, you know, killing a dozen children for no reason, then what is anti-Semitism? What does it even mean? It doesn't mean anything. So even complying to the concept that these things exist and matter and should be discussed is all a distraction from the actual substance of the arguments. If Nick Fuentes makes sincere points, not saying total Aryan victory, not saying I can't wait to get married so I can beat my wife, like, okay, taking out the edgy jokes, when you look at his actual response to, or the claims that he's making, the responses that he has to statements or policies, is there, they don't want you talking about it. The point is they don't want you talking about those things. Instead, what they want to say is, we're not even going to talk about the arguments you're making because we've declared all of them anti-Semitic. So now we have to debate anti-Semitism. Now we have to debate this concept we made up of the Jews versus the world. And you have to be on the side of the Jews or else you're evil. And it's like, this is stupid. Can we talk about Mark Levin? Can we talk about Israeli pressure on the American government? Or is all of that anti-Semitic? Don't fall for this, man. Just break free. Ignore this crap.
Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. Clarity, focus, it is so amazing. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively. Limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. And just like you said, Alex, we have suppliers that we work with, manufacturers that we work with in Florida, Utah, Arizona, and other places. We reached out to all of them and we asked them for a formula that would super enhance the effects of Methylene Blue, but also work as a standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement.
That man, the back computer, picked up a transmission from Alex Jones. And he's holding some kind of red serum.
Indeed, that appears to be Ultra Methylene Red. A powerful supplement, perhaps too powerful if it were to fall into criminal hands.
Holy neurotransmitters, Batman. What if the Riddler gets a hold of it? He could outthink us for once.
Precisely why we must act swiftly, old chum.
to the Batmobile.
There he is, Batman!
What's red, bottled, and drives your brain batty with brilliance? Ultra-methylene red, of course!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the Resistance.